April's one of the slowest months we've had in quite a while, probably a couple of years. So that's where we are with that. We received some grant funding for the remainder of our portable radios, which once that comes in to the city and goes up for approval, we can let you know where that came from. We just haven't received it yet, but it was a substantial amount of money to purchase the rest of the 20 portables, over $30,000. Update on the new truck. I spoke to the salesman today. The cab is being welded as we speak, and the portions of the ladder mounting are being welded to the frame. The cab is going to be mounted to the frame the first week of June, so everything's on schedule with that. So that's moving right along, and we should have pictures by next month for everybody to see. That's all I have, unless anybody has any questions.
Councilmen and women, any questions for Nick? Eileen?
No.
Oh.
Nope.
Okay. Your square lit up.
My screen is lit up.
No, your square. When someone makes a noise, there's a green box appears around their box, and yours lit up. Okay. Yeah. Oh, see, like Rebecca just did. But nobody has any questions for Nick. Any questions from the public for Nick?
I have a question.
Oh, go ahead, Tiffany.
Representing the fire department tonight or the police department?
No, fire.
Okay.
Oh, well, the chief is here for the police. Any other questions from the public or the council? Okay, thank you, Nick. Moving right along.
Thanks,
the next report up is Heather Campbell. Are you here, Heather? Heather?
I am.
Okay.
Am I unmuted?
You're not muted, no.
Okay, great. Okay, so I'm just going to go ahead and share my screen. Okay, so we'll start with financial reporting. We've been actively working on what's called the AUD, which is the annual update document. That's the approximately 1-inch thick document that we file annually with New York State that has all of the balance sheet and income statement information for all of the 16 funds that the city runs. So that's been completed. It's been filed with New York State, and that will be posted up on the website tomorrow for public consumption. I did pull the pages for the general fund so that we can review those today. I know people are especially interested in discussing the issue with the fund balance, so we'll be able to talk about that and show where we ended up. We also had a kickoff for the 2020 audit last week, so we'll be starting on that, pulling the data and the information they need. The auditors will be coming in to do some field work in June. And hopefully we will have the audit completed probably by the end of August, ideally, which will be great because it has to be done before the end of the year in order to meet EMMA requirements. EMMA is the municipal market, basically the municipal market where we have to report various activities. So that's good. This is the second year with the new auditor. So last year's was a little... took a little bit longer because we had to get them up to speed on all the basics and provide all the fundamental info that the previous auditors had, including every pilot agreement and every debt contract and all of those things. They all have that now, so this one should go pretty smoothly. Any questions on that? I was going to plan to talk about the 2020 results at the end, but I can do it now if people prefer.
What do you mean? The results of the audit?
No, of the AUD, of the annual. So basically the
annual, yeah,
okay. Final results of 2020, yeah.
Okay.
Assuming the auditors don't find any modifications.
Okay.
There have been a couple changes with OSC that are still gray areas, and I can talk to that once we get to the pages.
Okay.
We can borrowing, there's really nothing new here except for the fact that the official statement and the due diligence questionnaires are now complete. Once those are finalized and been 100% proofed, I'm going to post those to the city website as well, because they do have a lot of interesting information that a lot of people don't necessarily see, because it's not just the financials. It's also things like economic development, major employers, major property owners, tax collection rates. So it's a pretty good snapshot of the overall financial picture of the city. So I think that's something that people would be interested in reading, at least the people that are interested in city finance. Just operational stuff, just a few things. We're going to have, I think, two resolutions just to finally close out 2020. This is all just really housekeeping stuff, just to make sure that the right things are getting recorded to the right expense lines. It's nothing significant at all. It doesn't impact AUD or anything like that. It's just to make sure that we're as tight as we can be in reporting. One example would be we created all of these at the last minute based on labor attorney suggestions. We created this new IT role in every department that uses somebody to facilitate their Zoom meetings. And we just want to make sure we capture that in the right place. We've talked about the OSC corrective action plan before. Now that the AUD has been filed, my plan is to contact, obviously, Tracy. And Tracy and I think, will determine if there's other people that we should be bringing into the small working group with a focus primarily on looking at how we're tracking accruals, mm-hmm. Putting together a recommendation for the council in terms of what an accrual policy could look like. It's obviously the council's decision ultimately. But I think based on her wealth of experience and my somewhat experience, I think we can probably put together some pretty strong recommendations. One exciting thing that happened today is that the U.S. Department of the Treasury actually announced the launch of the coronavirus state and local fiscal recovery funds program, and they have provided some rules and structures in terms of how it's going to work and how it's going to happen. I know that early documents showed that we were going to get, obviously the first estimate from some places were looking at more like 2 million. The last thing that we saw is more like 667, but that is still an estimate. The award amounts are going to be based on population, and they plan to provide further guidance. NEU stands for non-entitlement units. Basically, those are small entities. Entitlement units are basically cities of $50,000 or more. So they're going to provide guidance, quote, in the coming days. So obviously we will be keeping our eye on that. Once the amount is finalized, we are going to get our funds from New York State. We're not going to get them directly from the federal government because we're a small entity. They're going to be responsible for dispersing the funds. And according to the Treasury, they have to disperse them within 30 days unless they get an extension from the Secretary of the Treasury, which I don't anticipate will happen, but until we know, we don't know.
Heather?
They have provided...
Oh, sorry. Yes. Go ahead. No, sorry.
Go ahead.
So you have the list of what it can be used for. Basically, it seems like it can be used for pretty much anything except to... the one thing I think they've made clear is that we can't use it against property taxes.
Right, and that's a very strange and gray area, and I actually had this conversation with our auditors the other day as well, because they can say that, but what does that mean? Right. I mean, if...
But we can't lower taxes.
Budget process for,
I thought that's what it meant. Like, we couldn't apply it to this...
You can't do a tax relief,
right,
presumably.
Right.
So you can't either wipe out people's delinquent taxes or do anything like that. But right. There's really nothing about that that dictates what we can do in terms of a tax rate going forward, because they would have no way of saying.
Oh, sure. If it went into the general fund, you mean.
Were thinking about doing a 1.5% tax, but now you're going to do a zero because of this.
Right.
So even the auditors thought it was a little vague, but yeah. So, but yeah, so here's the bullet points that in terms that said that, you know, what they can be used to do. So obviously public health expenditures relating to COVID, negative economic impact caused by COVID. Probably the one we're going to be focused on is the replacing lost public sector revenue,
mm-hmm.
Providing premium pay for essential workers, probably not as critical for us. And then investing in water, sewer, and broadband infrastructure. But, you know, as I think everybody knows at this point, we both have separate funds for water and sewer, and they are pretty decently well-funded, particularly because of sewer septage revenue. So I don't imagine that's going to be something that we want to consider.
Right, and there's going to be other streams, right, for that.
Say that again?
I think there are going to be other fund streams for all those, the last bullet point in the various proposals.
Perhaps.
Yeah, I think the state has already announced that. But that's okay. Never mind.
Okay. Okay, so we're just going to go to where we are year to date on just a couple metrics. Again, it's early enough in the year that we don't have some of the ones that we'd really like to see, like sales tax and mortgage tax. But looking at parking revenues, we had this conversation last week, you can see that we are doing okay. We're pretty much right on target when it comes to parking revenues, and that is largely because we continue to outpace the prior year on parking tickets significantly. And when I get a little further down, people had asked what the breakout was, so I contacted the Parking Bureau, and they reached out and they provided a report comparing Q1 2020 versus Q1 2021, so we can go through that a bit. But you can see things continue to be about the same, where on off-street parking, that's a little variable. It depends on when the coins actually get collected by the person that collects them and when they get deposited to the bank, which is something that they handle. But I'm confident that that's going to be a fine number. We are continuing to see that Front Street Municipal Lot is continuing to underperform, and I don't anticipate that changing significantly going forward. Although with offices now opening up, hopefully we'll see somewhat of a bump there. Parking and other permits is right in line, and parking tickets is also looking very strong. So if you look at where we were for the first 4 months in 2020 versus 2021, we're actually up about $23,000. So that's great. And a lot of that obviously has to do with parking tickets. So here is what the Hudson Parking Bureau was able to provide to us.
Oh, nice.
And what you can see is the major things are wrong side parking, which is up about $7,000 versus a year ago, and it's just first quarter to first quarter. Obviously, the other significant one is the meter violation, and that's probably the most significant increase. You can see logically that the South Front Street lot has decreased because fewer people are using the lot, fewer people have permits, so you would expect that one to decline. So I would assume that the changes made to the meter by increasing the rate are definitely having a positive impact there. And obviously, you know, I can't remember, honestly, Tom, you might know if we changed the rates on wrong side parking.
I don't think we did.
So then that's just our parking enforcement officers being more diligent, or mm-hmm. people just getting used to the fact that they used to be able to get away with things during COVID, and now we're tightening up controls again.
Okay.
And just a quick look at building permits and fees. Again, we're looking pretty good here. We're at, yeah, overall, we're at 41% of budget through 33% of the year. I think obviously with the restrictions loosening up on COVID and, you know, some of the development that we've been seeing and some of the purchases of properties, I expect to see this number go up considerably. Especially with, for example, the 620 Union Street Hotel coming into place. I think that will be a nice bump. The only question is whether that will start in this calendar year or not. And that's all I have before I go into the actual 2020 general fund finances, unless anybody has any questions before I move forward.
Questions from the council?
I think that's just one question, Rebecca. Heather, does your office, like, so there, you know, there are various things in the city that fines are attached to, and does your office collect fines from, or is it, I mean, I'm talking about the actual collection mechanisms, like, is the treasurer's office responsible for those, or is it, like, for example, in the code enforcement office, there are certain things that, you know, that have fines attached to them. Does the code enforcement office collect those fines, or does your office?
The code enforcement office collects those fines.
Okay. And then they, like, give them to you, essentially, or?
They collect them. They receipt them in. I can go through the whole very specific procedural detail. There's checks and balances to make sure that everything's covered. There's receipts in triplicate. But basically, they collect the money. They receipt it in. They keep a copy of a receipt. They will make a deposit. They will bring that money to the treasurer's office. My team will receipt it in, give them a copy back of the receipt, so there's all double checking and we can track all the revenue. And then my team deposits it to the bank. And that's true with every department. I'm just trying to think if there's any department that doesn't have fines. I guess the youth department and the senior department don't have fines, but DPW does things like permits, you know, to close streets and things like that. That's how all of that stuff is handled.
Okay.
Okay. Please continue, Heather.
Okay. Okay. So the first thing I'm going to go through is the balance sheet and where we ended up. So the balance sheet basically shows what assets the city has. And those include cash, taxes receivable, and you'll notice all of these numbers are positive except for this called the allowance for uncollectible taxes, and that's basically a calculation that determines how much of all these taxes receivable we think we may never collect, and that's a formula that's dictated by the Office of State Controller. We also have accounts receivable, which are things that basically we are owed money for. Due from other funds is basically the result of interfund loans. You will recall that often if we're doing a capital project, we will, for example, loan water, you know, $500,000 so they can get this project underway. So we don't have to borrow money. So when they get their reimbursements back, they pay the loan back to the general fund. So almost all of that money are loans to the capital fund, different capital projects across different funds. Due from other governments, this is the 5% of AIM money that we still have not received. It has not been made clear to us whether or not we're going to be whole on that, but better to record it than not at this point. Prepaid expenses are, that's basically the city offers their health insurance is a high deductible plan, but the city actually covers the deductible for employees. And so that's considered a prepaid expense. And then cash special reserves are cash that we have on hand, but that are dedicated to specific things. One of the major things here would be obviously the money that we have set aside for the fire truck. So you can imagine that number unless we create another special reserve for an upcoming capital project, which is, of course, something I think we should always be looking at doing. You can expect that number to come down next year. So total assets of $8.2 million. The next section is liabilities and fund balance. So our major liabilities are accounts payable, so obviously things we've purchased that we haven't paid for, due to other governments, that was some city-owned pilot payments that that hadn't been paid out by the end of the year, due to the Tories retirement system and to the school district. The school district is because we collect, the school district issues its own tax bill and is responsible for collecting them, but as of November of every year, we have to, we become responsible for collecting the outstanding taxes within the city of Hudson. And then after 2 years, we have to make them whole on whatever it is that they are outstanding, whether or not we've collected it or not. Deferred taxes is a relatively arcane thing. It has to do with, it's directly tied to the allowance for uncollected taxes, and basically kind of says we still might get this money. It's a very specifically weird thing. The capital reserve fund, that's 353. That's what we have set aside for the ladder truck at this point. The 253 includes a bunch of other things, most noticeably about 153 for the remainder for the tourism board reserve. And then there's a bunch of sort of legacy and ancillary reserves that are included in that as well. So here's the $499,000 that we used to balance the 2021 budget. And the $724,000 is assigned unappropriated. So that's basically all the stuff that was budgeted in 2020 that didn't get spent but can't be released to fund balance because it's committed either through a grant commitment, a grant or a purchase or something like that. So at the end of the day, I know when we were talking a week or two ago before this was finalized, we were looking at maybe $2.5 million in unassigned fund balance. It's actually got to a little below 2.4, but still obviously better than some of my earlier projections. So that is sort of where we are on that. And what you'll see, and I don't know how much detail you'd like me to go into in terms of the income statement, but I think the most critical thing to know in the income statement is that expenditures exceeded revenue by slightly over $500,000 this year. And if you're interested, I can go through some of the you know, the reviews of things. I'm not sure how much detail you'd like to get into at this time on that, so I will leave that up to you guys.
I think we could read that at our leisure. Could
Is there anything there that we should know, like, immediately?
No, I think everything. The fund balance thing, notwithstanding, the revenue projections were actually pretty accurate. So we saw what we thought we were going to see, which is we obviously saw a big decrease in lodging tax. You can see it went from 340 down to 220. So that was a pretty big hit. But aside from, I mean, but everything else basically sort of came in where we expected it to. Again, the parking, some of the parking revenues were lower, particularly because of South Front Street, because people aren't, you know, commuting into the city for their jobs during COVID. So we took a hit there as well. You know, it was offset by some other positives. Mortgage tax was a little higher than we thought. Sales tax was decent and higher than we thought. But those are pretty much the highlights. I'm just scanning through quickly to see if there's anything else that was substantially impacted. You know, and as Kamal's press release said, you know, most of the departments were really good at, you know, curbing their expenditures and trying to save as much as they could. So expenses actually were well managed, and that made a big difference. So I give kudos to those department heads.
Okay. Council members, any questions for Heather?
Is there any funding there that we can use for the youth department for the summer outdoor programs?
I mean, that would be a question for the BEA and the council if they wanted to do yet another budget amendment. My understanding was that the youth department had a pretty comfortable budget in terms of their summer program, but...
Yeah, we'll find out from Nick.
Yes.
Well, there's always money that can be used for that. It's just a question of getting a BEA resolution for it. And we can ask Nick if he's looking for that when he gives his report.
The other thing, oh, sorry, Tom.
Go ahead. That's it.
I was just going to say, in my opinion, the first thing that I would like to do if we are going to amend the 2021 budget would be to provide resources for the senior center. Because right now, the senior center literally does not have an employee. And I think that is...
Well, they have the budget for a part-time employee. So that's not... I mean, they may not have... We can ask Robin about that, but... They do have the budget money for a part-time employee. Whether they have one or not is...
So basically, we just need an announcement that we need an employee for the senior center.
We'll have to ask Robin. Sure, she's coming up soon, so we can ask her. She's up next, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. But I would just, you know, if we could get, you know, a full-time employee there.
Agreed.
Because that would make all the difference, I think.
Yeah, I think the senior center has a budget for the employee, but, yeah.
It's only part-time. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think the key is, you know, not to think that, I mean, we should be glad that it's turned out the way it has in terms of what's in the general fund, but it doesn't mean we can, you know, go on a spending spree. But nobody's talking about that either. I'm not saying you are. I'm not saying you are, Tiffany. I'm just mean, I don't want to give the impression. I mean, I would say we lucked out, but, you know, that's not exactly how it happened. Any questions from the council for Heather?
Yeah, I do. Go ahead.
Jane, please.
Yeah.
Heather, can you take down your screen so I can see everybody too? So, you know, it's easier for me to... Go ahead, Jane.
Okay. So Heather, thank you for breaking out the parking thing. As you know, that's been a stick in my craw, and it was very interesting to see how much of the parking thing is generated by alternate side street parking. I myself am a proud contributor to that fund. The other thing I would just like to mention in response to Tiffany's comment about additional money and where it might be allocated, and I know that Robin is coming up next, and I just sort of as a prelude to that, I want to toss my support in for additional funding, if it's possible, in support of the senior center. I think that we are perhaps not as focused on that demographic as we could be or should be. And I know that Robin is going to be addressing the council, but I think that's an important consideration for the council too. To think about and to seriously forward. Okay, that's it.
Thank you, Jane. Tiffany.
Jane, I don't disagree one bit. I've always supported the seniors. You know, I hope to become one someday. but I know that we have a budget set for the seniors and for a part-time employee. If we can see, and I know it was like really hard during that time when the departments were, deducting their budget.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you remember, but the youth department was being really criticized at that time. And I just want to make sure that, you know, and I say this every year of every 2 years, I don't want to see our children neglected at any point. You know, people are saying how they feed them around, you know, they're not doing anything. And this is where the youth department comes in strong with indoors and outdoor activities. And the seniors are set. I love my seniors. Like I said, I hope to be there. If we can get some money for both, that would be awesome.
Okay. Let's leave it at that. I feel strongly about the seniors. And anyway, I don't want to hog this conversation. Let's move on.
Okay, thank you. Council members, if you're done, does the public have any questions for Heather? Anyone in the public?
This is Malachi. I'm just agreeing with Tiffany here, pertaining to our youth, that, you know, just needing something for them, like right now, currently, just in real time, because, you know, given the situation about, you know, what's going on in Hudson right now, you know, the weather's getting better. So, you know, just things seem to be happening more. So I think if we can, get funding to just allocate towards our youth, which, you know, that I think getting them in perspective and, having them busy with things to do would definitely just benefit the city in a great way. And I'm all for it, looking forward to doing something for the youth. But if anybody got, just some ideas of what else we can do to, keep the youth busy. I mean, right now I'm talking about, not, later on. But I think this is a situation that needs to be addressed immediately. So it's my 2 cents with this.
Okay. Thank you, Malachi. Any questions from the public for Heather? Okay, then I guess we can move on. Let me just say, Heather, I think it was brave of you to, admit the problem that happened and come forward ahead of time and let us all know. It was great news. So thank you for your reporting. And it's just a great relief to know we're not in as bad shape as you had originally predicted. So thank you.
Agreed.
Moving right along, since we're talking about youth and the elderly, I think Robin is up next to talk about the elderly. Robin, are you there somewhere?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you so much. Okay. And thank you to those of you bringing up the senior center and the need for additional funding. Yes, there is money for a part-time employee, but without a full-time employee, it becomes very disjointed. I don't know if people realize now, but with the budget we were given, we don't have enough for cleaning staff. So DPW has been really pitching in and helping out as much as possible. But it really, we can't have them come in as much as we would need in order to open safely. So there is a real need for staff to make the senior center safe enough to reopen. Along those lines, the county meal site with the Office of the Aging is scheduled to open May 24th at the firehouse. And that will be 5 days a week. And obviously the social distancing protocols will be in place, but that will be able to provide seniors in the community with that meal site again. But the senior center was hoping to open alongside them the same day, but we don't have the staffing to do that. So it is a bit of a dire situation. We are maintaining our ongoing programs, virtual programs, and then also outdoor programs. So those will continue. But in terms of having any programs in the senior center, we do need additional funding to make that possible. So we are also working on establishing the senior center as its own department. And that requires a full-time employee to do that. It also requires a resolution and an amendment to the charter, since the charter was written prior to a senior center existing. It is outdated in terms of how it outlines the commissioner role, and also there's just no indication of the senior center there. So that needs to happen. So we are looking for support from the council for a resolution to make the senior center its own department. So if there's anyone who would be willing to champion that and support the senior center, but
Robin, I think there'll be plenty of us willing to support it. What we need though is to have Jeff go over things to make sure how it's set up by the charter and the code.
Yes.
And then we can do that.
Okay. That would be great. Did you have a question, Tiffany?
You're muted, Tiffany.
Yes. I have, I would like to know, do you have a current staff now?
We have one employee now, George Bender, who was an employee at the youth department previously. He has been working to partner with the Office of the Aging to help to reestablish or to reopen their county meal site. And so he goes between the senior center and the meal site.
So you have one employee and you are looking to hire a part-time employee. Is that the roundabout type of staff you all have always had? Two part-time employees?
Yeah, exactly. There's only been two part-time employees. So, and part-time meaning about 11 hours a week.
Okay, so between those two part-time employees, one of them, one of them was in charge of cleaning, correct?
No, there was also a cleaner previously.
So three employees?
Previously, mm-hmm. All part-time.
Two part-time and a part-time cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would be in support of having the senior center having its own department, but I would want to see certain things in place. I have a great community and communication with the seniors in mm-hmm. the second ward. And I was recently speaking with a woman because I speak Spanish. I'm also Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't know anything about the senior center, but she was also, shy about going because she's like, does anyone speak Spanish there? You know, and I can just imagine that for our Bengali community.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would love to see if the senior center is going to become its own department, to have these certain things in place. So it's welcoming, as its own department for all seniors to feel comfortable, whether they speak the full language of English or not, to have someone there that they can communicate with, share their culture with, and so forth.
Yeah, I 100% agree, but we just need additional funding to do that. So when we are hiring and canvassing the list, we are based in Hudson residents. So we are hoping to get somebody from the community.
I was going to say, take advantage of the people we have. We have a lot of people, young people that speak different languages, and that are willing to volunteer.
Yeah.
For a stipend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'd love to work with you more on that and making sure that those are in place. So to somewhat address those needs, some of the resource guides that we put on our website, we are translating those into different languages. So that is a goal of ours, but we really, and that's why a full-time employee is important, because when you have somebody there who is like the anchor and who can coordinate volunteers for translation or coordinate different programs and be serve more as a director role where they're overseeing the different part-time employees and then volunteers.
Robin, but, when you talk about a full-time employee, are you suggesting that the part-time one that you already have the budget for should be upgraded to a full-time? Or are you talking about another employee?
We're talking about another employee.
Okay.
A full-time employee.
Okay, so maybe if you could put together some more about that, we can think about it. Tiffany, did you have your hand up again, or?
Oh, that's me.
I was saying it was four employees.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Tiffany. Jane.
It's not four, because it's not all at the same time. That was over. That was in 2019. It was a separate budget.
Any other questions for Robin?
Yeah.
Jane.
Number one, I fully endorse the idea of creating a standalone department for the senior population in Hudson. I think it's the right time, and maybe even it's really important. I think that Tiffany raises really good points about encouraging different various cultural groups within Hudson to participate in the seniors, and there's a lot of ways to do it, but it probably best be done when it's its own standalone unit and not part of something else like youth. Yep. So I think that really goes to the idea of the importance of creating the unit, creating a department, and encouraging different language groups, different cultural groups to participate, and potentially involving youth. But, you know, that would be a programmatic thing that I don't think we're kind of there yet. So anyway, that's just what I wanted to say, that I endorse it. And I think Tiffany brought a really good idea to the table. That's it.
Okay. Thank you, Jane. Anyone else?
I was just going to add that we did receive a grant with the library from the Fund for Columbia County's Grants for Aging with Dignity to create memory kits that can be loaned out to the community for seniors, either to be used with their caregivers or independently to evoke memories and to help engage them in some activities that they can use at home. And they would borrow it from the library and return it. So we're in the process of constructing these memory kits for the community.
Okay. Well, thank you, Robin.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for your support. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Next up is, and I like, as I said, I'll work with Jeff to figure out how we can set up this department as a separate department, because it should be done, and to figure out possibilities with the budget to enhance the programming at the department.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
I just want to say, Robin, I'm just really proud of, the way that, how diligent you are and getting things done for the seniors. I've always admired that, and I think you're doing a fantastic job. That's it.
Thank you, Malachi. Okay, the youth department. Nick, you're up.
I have a question.
Oh, Tom. Sorry, I didn't see you there, Linda. Go ahead.
I'd like to hear, Robin, what is the impact on the seniors going to the firehouse and not at the senior center to get Meals on Wheels and other things? Could you talk more about that?
Sure. I'm not sure what you mean exactly by the impact on them, but
I meant the impact on the senior center in Hudson.
Yeah. It's more of an expansion. It's not necessarily, doesn't negatively impact. We are working closely together to make sure that our programs complement and that we are making people aware of both sites. And so we are looking to expand the programs at the senior center once we receive funding and staff and all of that, to enhance what already exists. So we're not trying to overlap. It doesn't have a negative impact in any way. And actually, the Office of the Aging does pay rent. The county pays rent now at the firehouse, so it's additional money for the city.
So I guess one question is, why did they leave the senior center?
Well, they had reviewed the firehouse prior to moving into the Galvin space at the library. They like the parking situation there. They feel that's easier for some of the participants. They originally used a large room. We needed to use the large room to reopen potentially and move the county meal program to the smaller room. They wanted to only be in the larger room, so they thought that the firehouse would be additional space. So in conversations with the Office of Aging, we figured that this was the best case scenario for both locations.
Oh, this is news to us. Is this for all the programming or just for the lunch?
Just the lunch.
I see. And you're saying it hasn't changed who attends or who's able to attend?
Well, it's hard to say who attends because it's been closed since March. But
and is this a permanent? Is this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's more of an expansion to our services.
Just to add in what I was told, and they said on the County Health and Human Services that there was not enough parking. And it was terribly inconvenient for the seniors to be at the senior center in Hudson at the library. So that's why they chose to move it to the firehouse. So just wanted to make sure that's clear for everybody.
That's not what Robin's saying.
Yeah.
That's what he means.
Okay. So, thank you, Linda. Can, Nick, you're ready there?
Jane, did you still have a question or was that
No. No, I'm good. Thanks.
I don't have any photos this week, but would you guys prefer if I put my agenda for the review up or just keep talking and I read off of it?
You can just keep talking.
So starting with updates, the very exciting news is that our six-week hiring process has come to an end. And tomorrow, my replacement, the new youth director, Liz York, will be starting at the youth department. So that's really exciting news. We're welcoming her. We worked it out with civil service, and I'm going to be doing basically a four-day transition, and Friday will be my last day in the position. And so that's big news, but also very exciting. She's very excited to come on. Our staff are excited to start meeting her and getting to work with her, and so it's going to be a great new phase for the youth department. To that extent, she's going to be jumping right into summer planning. We have been working to put together basically the foundations of a summer camp plan that she and the staff can build off of. But the good news is that so far, it's looking like summer camp can start to get back to a little bit of what our community has loved about it in past years. So we're going to be back at Oakdale this year. It'll run basically the same time period that it has historically, from July 5th through August 12th, 6 weeks of camp. The campers, because of COVID, will be broken up into groups that we will be trying very hard to keep separate from each other. Right now we're starting with 15, but New York State has not put out their regulations or recommendations, so we'll be looking for those to come out, and those will give us the actual numbers of how many youth per pod or cohort, as they're calling them. Big news is that we will be able to offer swimming in Oakdale Lake, and Department of Health has actually also told us that swim lessons are a possibility too. So we really could be getting back to what a lot of youth and families really love about Oakdale in the summer, and having those traditional programs open to the kids. There'll obviously be lots of restrictions on them, but we're really getting back to a certain set of normal, which is really exciting. We will be doing the same lifeguard training process that we did last year, not only for our existing lifeguards, but we'll be offering 12 scholarships for new lifeguards to get certified. Because we hired so many last year, there's no guarantee that they will be hired, but they will be able to apply and get their certification for free. And then there'll obviously be candidates for lifeguards at Oakdale this year. That's thanks to Friends of Hudson Youth. And I believe that portion of that is coming out of the Polar Plunge funds that were raised this year. And it's looking like Department of Health has also given us the okay for field trips and food service for this summer. So, again, we are definitely looking forward to that. And I guess that could be a good segue into Alderwoman Garriga's comments about the budget. And we did change the budget from the original proposal in the efforts of trying to reduce the overall budget because of worries about COVID and about budget and about revenue shortfalls. And so there was a significant amount taken out of our budget specifically that came out of the summer camp and Oakdale lines. And so I think that I would, I guess what I would say is that I would love to see the council replenish some of those funds that we specifically took out for COVID related savings. And my friendly challenge to the council, and I'll exempt Tiffany from it since she's been such an advocate, is that I would love for the council to put together a resolution to bring those funds back to our budget, just so that the new director can come in and not have to do that herself. And that can be the council saying, we need this funding for the youth. We need to support this. We took it out of the budget, but we want to put it back in. And it doesn't have to be a new director coming and asking for more money, because I think that would, I wouldn't want her to have to do that. But I think that would be a great thing for the council, as Tiffany suggested, if folks were up for it. And I can give the exact figures for what was taken out. I was been looking at it while we're talking. It was roughly around $12,000 for summer programming that we took out.
Okay, Nick, if you can send me that information, I'll get a resolution ready for next Tuesday.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Tiffany. So at the youth center, virtual programming is still going on. That's through direct outreach to youth and direct programming, and also through social media platforms. If folks haven't checked out our Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, then please do that. Our youth workers are putting out a lot of great content. It's very good to see. In preparation for the new director coming on, we finished up almost all of the kind of repairs and improvements to the youth center. I think at this point, almost every wall, every floor, everything has gotten a fresh coat of paint. Incredible cleaning, lots of refinishing. It looks really great in here. As you all know, there's some stuff we can't hide. This is an old building that's in bad shape, but everything that we can fix, we really have. We've made it look a lot better. So we're excited to give a tour to the new director tomorrow, and we're, of course, very excited for the kids to come back and see all the work that we've done. The one big project that we finished this past week was the what used to be called the all-purpose room. It's now kind of audio-visual, and a lot of you saw last year we did a public green screen outside because we're doing so much video programming with our youth, and now we have a green screen inside. So, you know, the youth basically have the capability to both with audio and visual. So whether it's making a movie or making their own song, start to finish, they can record, edit, produce, and publish material right out of this new room in the youth center. We have all the technology, the software. Our staff are being trained to process and facilitate that. So it's an exciting new set of programs and kind of offerings for our youth. Up and coming, some folks may notice that we took the lifeguard chair down, which was in bad shape. Friends of Oakdale is going to be helping to pay for a new one. I think we're looking for donations of wood from a couple hardware stores. But we're going to be putting up a new lifeguard chair. A lot of you know that was in pretty rough shape last year, past few years. So that'll be a great new addition. As I said last meeting, we're not going to be opening for drop-in programming in the spring. But we are hoping to offer some individual field trips for youth. some evening basketball, and hopefully getting the bike co-op back going again before the summer so that we can offer some programs to youth before summer programming starts at Oakdale. I said it last meeting, but I'll say it again. Summer hiring process is underway. We are applying for, we're taking applications for lifeguards and rec attendants. You can check our website for all of those applications and our Facebook page. It's all very easy to do online. We have all the applications right there. Someone can do it over their phone. And we're doing an added kind of value this year where anyone who applies for our jobs, regardless of whether they hired, will come in, and we're doing hiring workshops where folks who don't have a resume or a cover letter can come in, work with our staff to do that. So whether they get hired or not, going to their next job, they'll have that resume and that cover letter as kind of a job training component to our hiring process. So we're really excited about that new addition for summer hiring. I was on the phone with Columbia Green Workforce. They're still taking applications. I think they're ending very soon though for workforce hiring through them. We'll be working with Columbia Green again this year to bring folks on through that program. Highly recommend that folks who know youth ages 14 to 16, which is a little younger than we hire on, to apply through that program. And then we have opened up summer registration for Oakdale this year for youth and families, but it's been a directed program to the families that we work with, and we've kind of prioritized. It will be open to the general public this Wednesday, May 15th. So you'll see that open up on May 15th for everyone on our Facebook page and website. We will be capping the number of youth who can register for summer camp until we know our final numbers from the Department of Health on how many youth can participate in one pod or cohort. So we'll, at the current level, we're capping at 60 youth occupying four groups of 15, and we're setting a maximum limit at 100. So the first 60 youth who sign up for Oakdale camp will get registered. Everyone after that will be put on a waiting list, and if we get numbers from the Department of Health in New York State, we'll increase the number of pods and the number of youth per pods if allowed to go up to 100 youth this summer. So that would be a really great thing if we could get back to closer to our pre-COVID numbers and try to serve 100 youth. I feel like that would be a really great service. We are very aware that a lot of families have been hit very hard by COVID, and the lack of daycare, the lack of youth programming, as Malachi said, has really been detrimental to our community. And we're really excited to open up this summer and try to get back to what we used to be able to do and to offer that programming, that service for Hudson youth. So that's really our main focus right now. To try to serve as many youth this summer and provide as safe and fun of a program for them as possible and give a little break to Hudson parents this year in our community. And that's the last thing I have, unless any folks have any questions.
Well, before we take any questions, Nick, this is your last meeting as youth director. I want to thank you for what you've done with the youth center these past years. It's been a struggle. But you've really, done a fantastic job, in my opinion. I'm sure most of the council agrees. So I want to thank you on behalf of the council. And any questions?
Yeah, Nick, this is Dylan. I thank you.
You took some of the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah. Nick, I'm still in disbelief, man. This is Malachi, man.
Go ahead, Malachi. Is that it?
Oh. Yeah, just Nick knows he's just been an inspiration for me. Just being here today is, just from some of the work of Nick doing. And I'm, just going to miss you in position. I spoke to a lot of other people that, you've had a very huge impact on this community and the kids. And you know, you're just going to be missed, and just some huge, huge shoes to fill. You know, I'm sure that, you know, this next person coming on is going to be great for the position because, you know, you help pick them, but it's just, a, you know, just a huge, huge shoes to fill and for your position.
Thank you, Malachi. I don't know who got their hand up first, but I'll go with Tiffany. You're next, Rebecca.
Yeah. I wanted to say the same thing. Your dedication to our children, particularly the kids that I represent in the Second Ward, is tremendous. I remember just, you know, seeing you guys at the waterfront cooking fish. And I was just like, oh, you have to do this all the time. So that was the best. And just seeing the smiles on the children's faces and just running up to you, Nick, always have something to say. That's a beautiful thing. And you will be 100% missed. Just come back dressed up as Santa once in a blue. I also want to thank the Friends of Youth for looking out with the replacement for the
lifeguard chair.
Thank you. So thank you to the Friends of Youth because that's extremely important. And I'm looking forward to meeting the woman who's taking your place, but taking on that position.
I think you're all really going to like her. I'm excited to introduce you to her.
Thank you, Tiffany. Rebecca.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to also say thank you. And I'm excited to see your next chapter. And also, I was just going to ask if you could tell us anything just like the bare bones about the new person, just like where they, you know, any little tidbits.
About the new director?
Yeah.
Yeah, her name is Liz York. She is a Columbia County native. And, you know, we didn't get a huge number of applications. It's very difficult to hire for a position like this at the salary where it's at and limit it to Columbia County, which we have to do for civil service. And so when Liz's application and resume came over our desk, all of our jaws kind of dropped. Because she had the experience supervising large numbers of staff in directing and facilitating youth programs, in working on budgets. And her last job was at a residential treatment facility. So she understands a lot about the population we're working with and a lot about difficult youth who have had trauma and have had hard upbringings. And so she really comes with everything. And so it was really amazing to find a local person who was willing to take it on. And, you know, it was a really long process. We had interview after interview. We did process with our staff. Then we brought in community members, basically family members of the youth who we work with and mothers of families who we serve to help in the process. And it turned out that you know, some of the mothers who work with us knew her and had great things to say about her. And so it was a really exciting connection to make. And when we finally got to offer the job after this long process, it meant a lot to me because she was incredibly excited. She'd been just waiting every day to hear something. And she's so excited. And that's such a big thing for me to see somebody who has a lot of energy and enthusiasm. And I think, like I said, I think it's going to usher in a new phase at the youth department. And yeah, I'm really excited to introduce you to all to her and get you to know her more.
Thank you. Calvin.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Nick, I just wanted to say thank you again. I can't say that enough. You know, you've been an asset to the community, to the youth center. And the lives of so many of our youth. So I can't say thank you enough. I guess my question was, how have the youth received this information of you, like, you know, kind of not necessarily disappearing, but no longer being as available as you have been at the youth center? How's that going over with the youth?
Well, you know, that's been a, it's been a hard thing, because, and we have kind of put it out on social media to let our new youth know, but because they're not here every day, we don't have that access. And so there's definitely going to be youth who come to summer camp this year, and they won't know that I have been replaced by someone new. And so that's, I guess I'll have to probably come to camp and do some kind of little process of saying goodbye to some of the kids. But the other thing is, like, I'm not going anywhere. I still live two blocks away, and I have a hard time believing I'm not going to be involved one way or another, whether it's continuing to do program with the youth department or, you know, sponsoring a traveling basketball team so I can still be involved in that way, or I'm sure that I'm going to stay very involved. So for all we know, the kids may not even notice.
No, I can speak on that a little bit. And just a handful of youth that I know personally that Nick stepped in, went beyond, you know, beyond the call of duty for, they're going to miss you deeply. I can't stop, you know, hearing about it, or they won't stop talking about it. But thank you, Nick, again.
Thank you, Malachi.
Okay. Barring further tributes to Nick, but unless there's somebody else with,
from Tom, we cannot hear you.
Oh, Tom.
Sorry, I'm trying to avoid everybody hearing me sneeze and everything. Sorry, I was saying, barring further tributes to Nick, from the council, there's one hand up from the community. Anybody else from the community, please raise your hand. So, Bill.
Yeah, hi. Nick, last month I inquired about the tree that had fallen in the back of the platform, and you said that you were going to take a chainsaw to it, and I'm just wondering if that's going to happen before you leave.
Well, we already did get back there and start some of the work on it, Bill.
I guess I'm inquiring when it's going to be finished, like completely taken
hopefully
apart.
Hopefully before Friday.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
That's your last day, Friday?
Bill.
Are you going to?
You asked the question. He's answered it, Bill. Don't.
Okay. So I just want to confirm that the plan is to get the tree off the platform and more tree by Friday.
Bill.
Is that right?
Bill. You've asked the question, and he's answered. He's answered. You have to.
And he's ready to. He's ready to tell me more. If you just step aside for 1 second, Tom, it'd be okay.
Okay, I'll step aside. Nick.
Tom is right. That's the plan. To get it done by Friday. Just really, especially for you, Bill. I'm excited to pull this one through for you.
And then you're going to fix the platform, or you're going to leave it like it is, or what's?
I'll tell you what, Bill. Because I'm riding high on all the great compliments people were giving me. No, would you let me finish?
Go right ahead.
I'm riding high on all the nice comments everybody gave me. So I'm going to do something I haven't done in about 3 years, and I'm going to give you a call tomorrow, and we can go over a list of all the things you would like me to do before Friday, and we'll see what we can check off.
Yeah, I really don't want to talk to you on the phone. The other question is,
offer attracted.
Second question.
Bill list is checked off.
Second question.
Bill, now you have to fix the platform.
Yeah. So you told us last year that OSHA doesn't allow you guys, you or any of the youth department employees, to get on a ladder. Is that right?
No, you twisted it a little bit from the truth, Bill.
That's what you told me, and that was the reason why you couldn't fix the downspouts on the bathhouse.
A little bit. It's more sophisticated than that. It's not just, no, you can't be on a ladder.
But when I asked you why you guys didn't fix your own downspouts, you told me you weren't allowed to get on a ladder. That's what you told me.
No.
You said that at a public meeting, Nick.
Well, okay. You can look at the notes and you can pull up the public meeting, but I said something close to that, but not exactly that. And I don't want to get into OSHA regulations in a meeting that a lot of people are hoping is going to be shorter.
But you brought it up a year ago.
Bill, come on, Bill.
Bill,
I was going to give you a call. And we could have talked through all of this, but you said you didn't want to talk to me. So yeah, I'm sorry, but you lost out on this one.
Oh, now you're twisting things. I said I didn't want a phone call from you.
Okay, bye, Bill. Thank you.
Oh, my God.
Okay. I love you, Bill. It's been fun.
Okay. Let's see. Do we have anybody else? Yes.
Tom, I got something.
Yes, I just saw that, Nick. Nick Pirro.
Sorry. Hey, Nick, thanks for your report and your service to the kids in the community. Not so much a question for you, but Tom, Nick had touched on getting some of the money back in the youth department budget that was lost due to the COVID. Would that go the same way for every city department as a request? As most people know, the volunteer fire department, we gave back $24,000 last year as part of the 10% give back. So we lost that of our budget. Would that be acceptable for departments that did do that to ask for some of the money back?
It's on the table. Why? Sure. I'm not, okay. You know, can't guarantee it, but do you remember what it was for? I mean, did it have a...
Well, that was the 10% give back that each department was asked right. to give back last year. And we lost $24,000 out of our 2020 budget
right.
for the give back. So maybe I can just get with you this week or send yeah. an email and we can discuss sure. it further.
Yeah.
I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, break it down and figure out what it is you weren't able to do.
Right.
That's great.
Perfect.
Yeah, please send it. You're welcome. Okay. So we can move on to our next presentation, which is from Rob Perry, if he's there somewhere.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Thanks, Rob.
Let's go. Ready, Freddy McSprotty?
There we go.
Okay. So... Accepted revenue for March was $29,000. It's a little bit closer to what we budget from a monthly basis. So, you know, obviously we had a hard winter. So we hopefully will bounce back and make the forecast for the year. This was just a couple weeks ago. You know, just more of the grit down at the tanks that comes in from the collection system. So you've got a vac truck, and here in the middle there's another tanker. So this one is filling this one, and this one is pulling the air off. And then after this middle one gets filled, it goes away on another truck, and then these two got filled up. In total, you get about 20 tons. And if those guys for one day with the disposal of all of this fine grit was about $15,000, and we already had a similar event take place the month before that was probably about the same price, $10,000 to $12,000. So, you know, the thing I try to bring home is that when all of this fine silt is on a city street, it's called dirt. And dirt is very inexpensive to treat and take care of. It just needs to get picked up and then dumped. Once it gets into the collection system and it mixes with human feces and sewage, it then becomes grit, and it takes an entirely different process to be disposed of, and they have to be licensed carriers and haulers. So it's a big deal. Let's see. I did want to give an update. The both Power Avenue and the Mill Street pump stations are nearly complete. We have we're just doing some punch list stuff with them. You know, the contracts should be complete and fulfilled within the next couple of months, and then we'll do our paperwork for EFC to get our 40% return to us, and then close out the financial documents with Heather. This is just something from the, looks like an EKG, I guess, kind of. It's not mine, though. This is from the water department. So we have these, we've been experiencing these wild fluctuations in pressure, back pressure. There's a huge valve at the head of the plant that holds the reservoir back. And, you know, we've been seeing some, you know, we've increased the flow to the plant by getting rid of some of the air in the transmission main. But that's created its a new problem. And what we're seeing is something that's called, I always forget how to say this name, hysteresis, I guess. Anyway, what happens is one valve is opening to increase flow. And so the other valve says, oh my God, you need more flow. So then it opens, and now you get too much flow. And so the other one backs up. And then the second one responds to that. So when we were doing that, we were seeing back pressure of, you know, 76 to 70 PSI. This is pressure that's going back on the transmission main, you know, that's 120 years old. So you're seeing almost like little mini hammers. We did get install a couple of pressure relief valves outside on the hydrant. And these are smaller ones. We were able to reduce by about 10 PSI So what we've done now is we've ordered a larger one, the 6-inch that we'll be actually cutting and installing on the raw water main. We, you know, the goal is to get these down around 50 PSI, hopefully. So that way, when the processes are changing, we're not having these, you know, these kind of concussion waves, these hammers going back on the transmission. The sleeve that's going to go around that main to put the external PRV on it, this is a wraparound. We'll have a contractor who will actually core a hole from this side, and then we install the valve onto it. The site is going to go in between these gas mains. Your gas mains are here. You got electric down here. There'll be a drainage pit here for it. So that's something we'll start excavating tomorrow. Project will probably take about a month because we need some other parts to be delivered. Promenade Hill. Also, own water. Just, you know, within the next 4 weeks or so, we'll start hydrant flushing and, you know, raw water transmission main cleaning. So there'll be updates when we get close to those. Promenade Hill is a live project. So lots of steps to get here. The chain link fence is up. One of the first things that we needed to do after the fence was up was to have National Grid disconnect the power. And you can see all the power is underground. Wow. And this is for those streetlights that are in the park, which is why the park is now closed. There's still, I believe the mayor's office is working on an easement with the terrace to get some access from alongside the north fence through the gate. But even when that is up and running, that's only going to be hours a day because the power is dead on the whole park. We need to, obviously, this stays. We're not taking that out. But all of these streetlight, the poles have to be taken down. The bases have to be removed. The conduit has to be removed because the new lights are going to be moved in different locations. So it's quite a bit of demo work. We look to start, you know, mid to late this week on completing the demolition. I know Kyle Russo is anxious to get in and start doing their work. Just seasonal. We got a little, you know, striping. One of the reasons we want to kind of get this done quickly, if we can get the weather to cooperate, because it's been raining, is, you know, when those new blocks get put down, we'd like to have them on top of the new line so that way, you know, it looks a little cleaner. These are, you know, a couple of the remaining RRFBs, which are those flashing crosswalk signs. This bed, I guess I can probably tell it. Hey, how about that?
There you go.
You know, so this is across from Grayson. So we have the, you know, the sonotubes are in. You know, the concrete's poured. It's got to, you know, it's got to cook for another couple of weeks. But once that's set, we'll be installing these, and then, you know, pre-pouring the concrete pad around it. The this is the Luck Oil one, which is still remaining. And the intent was to put it here, but we've got some control conflicts with the traffic light for CSX. There's also some egress issues with the cars pulling through here. And, you know, then you, if you have it over, you can't put it in the middle because you obstruct the crosswalk. You put it off to the side, you're in the drive lane. Also on this side, you know, that's not ADA accessible. So we'd have to hammer out that concrete curb. So the solution is to just relocate the crosswalk to up here. So it's at the intersection. There's already an ADA ramp, I believe, in this area. Maybe it's here on the side. Anyway, we're going to run and we'll just install a new crosswalk from this point over, and the RFB will go here in the corner and then over here by the gas station. So that's two of the remaining ones. Let's see, the striping, RFB, conflicts, summer streets. So we did, we see the first of the barriers. You know, this was, the park theater had like a little event there. So, you know, we just did this little mini project. It was kind of a beta test just to see how the installation was going to work. And these are the flower boxes. You know, the installation, it's not incredibly difficult. It is, you know, it does take some time. These things weigh about 2,400 pounds each. But that said, you know, it did involve an operator and a laborer to place them. We had two guys on a truck delivering them. We actually did require the assistance of HPD because even though there were no parking signs there, people parked there. So you know, there's a police officer and a dispatcher to kind of track down the owners. But, you know, with the collaborative effort, everybody got things in place. And so Shannon had his little shindig over the weekend. So Summer Streets. So just wanted to go into this one here. So, you know, we've taken an inventory, you know, just of our vehicles down at the garage. And, you know, you can see that some of these bad boys, you know, are kind of old. We actually have trucks that are from the 1980s that are still in service. These are just ones that have come out of service. And you can see, you know, rotten frame, rotten transmission case. Years of service, 23 years, 25 years. The reason I bring this to your attention is, you know, we've just taken four vehicles out of service because, you know, look, 26, 25, 24 years, 140,000 miles, 140, you know, those are, well, you know, those are city miles, you know, going from site to site. So, you know, there's a good chunk of vehicles missing from our inventory. And, you know, I also want to just brought, this is from Albany's budget. And so the city of Albany, you know, their internal service life for trucks are 10 to 12 years. You know, the New York State Comptroller recommends, you know, 4 to 8 years, because at some point you start spending more money on maintenance than you do, you know, just actually, you know, operating them. And, you know, when we send our vehicles to auction, you know, you get like $200 because it's basically scrap. You know, there's no real, they're not really roadworthy. So just something, you know, to bring your attention. The good news is I'm all in with everybody who says if we want to get some money back that was removed from the budget because of good times. You know, I may be easy, but I'm not cheap. You know, a couple hundred grand would be doing it for me. The other thing is this is up at the cemetery. The dump truck that was up there is totally shot. That's one of the four vehicles that was taken out. So now we get to load onto this little go-kart here with a little dump guy. It's not really that productive. So, you know, we are facing some inventory issues. You know, the requests get routinely removed from the budget. You know, I understand the process, but the need doesn't go away. And, you know, we still have a lot of work to do in the city. Just a quick update on the Ferry Street Bridge. Advanced detail plan should be submitted later this week to DOT. And, you know, if in regular construction, they say 30% plans, 60% plans, 90% plans, final plans. DOT has to give a different acronym to every stage of the thing. So the 90% plans would be, you know, PS&E, which would be plan specifications and estimate. You know, that would be the fourth step. We're at the third. So we're kind of at the 60 to 75% plans now, but this is something that DOT should make a relatively quick review of, and then that'll send us off to the equivalent of our final design, which is the PS&E. One of the other things that's come up is based on the age and antiquity of the abutments that we're going to be reusing, there's the engineers have seen this in other projects where instead of just backfilling, because when we build this bridge up, instead of backfilling with, you know, regular compacted stone, we're actually going to use a lightweight foamed glass aggregate. And it's, you know, structurally it's comparable, but it's significantly less, so that way we don't have to worry about putting any lateral stresses on the actual back of the wall of the abutment, because we'd hate to go through, obviously, putting a new bridge in there and have the abutment fall down on the tracks. So that's it from me.
Thank you, Rob. I'm just wondering if there's the grants. Can you ever get grants for equipment like that for vehicles?
I mean, maybe for something specialized, yeah, like a sewer rotter, right? You know, something that would be part of things, but just
But that's not something they usually go for. I agree. Yeah, sort of like personnel that way. Questions from the council? Anyone? There goes Jane. Jane?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jane.
Yeah, okay. Rob, thanks for doing the stuff for Shannon McGee's shindig, as you called it, and in anticipation of the enormous lift you and your crew is going to do to make the Warren Street
seasonal streets.
Seasonal fun in the sun happen.
Right.
It's going to be an enormous lift. And so thank you in advance for doing that.
Sure. It's going to be, we actually are, I believe Tony from the county and our neighbors in Greenport and Claverick are going to be donating manpower and equipment trailers.
Great.
It is going to be a little bit of a logistical thing. We'll be closing, as we install, we'll be closing blocks down, you know, one block at a time, but you know, it shouldn't be more than like, you know, 45 minutes or so per block. But yeah, right. I mean, Kate's been wonderful to work with, and, you know, she's going out and marking stuff for us. So, you know, a lot of the, we don't have to necessarily measure so much. We can just kind of plug them and place them.
Great.
I'm looking forward to it, but then I'm not.
Yeah, well, it's a big logistical job.
Excuse me.
Minimum, and to coordinate with your partners outside the city, that's a whole nother level of effort. So anyway, thank you on behalf of all of us. We'll enjoy it this summer.
Anything else from the council? The public, I see. Bill, you have a question. Let's, you know, be satisfied with your answers, Bill. Let's go. Bill? No? He's not answering.
Hey, I'm here. Are there? You there?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Hey, Mr. Perry, I asked you a few months ago how many employees, DPW, is it 36, 32? It depends on the time of the year. We have seasonal part-timers that come on in summer, so we have more in summer than we do in the winter.
So your full-time regulars is what, in the 30s, right?
No, full-time regulars is, I don't know, maybe 25.
Okay. Do you have a ballpark or a specific number of those 25 who are people of color, brown or black?
I think right now one. I can think of
one of 25. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. Second question is, I'm curious about a faded crosswalk at the corner of 3rd. In the state, it's on, 3rd and Columbia, it's on Columbia just before the turn, about 40 feet ahead of the intersection, west of the intersection. Are you aware of that one?
Roughly, sure.
Roughly.
Of course he is, Bill. Come on. What's the question?
So I'm wondering, you've been DPW head for what, like 10 years now or something?
Come on, Bill, please just ask a question. No.
This isn't a court of law,
and you're not a lawyer. Just ask your question.
I'm asking. If you'd let me. I'm wondering why every crosswalk on Warren Street gets yearly maintenance, and a crosswalk at our worst intersection in town on the truck route is almost completely faded, as if you've ignored it for 5 or 10 years. Can you explain how that happens? Maybe I shouldn't say you, Rob. You and your crew. You guys drive over it practically every day.
Okay, you're getting too hostile, Bill. I have to remove you, sorry. Okay, he had his chance. Okay, any other questions?
At least he keeps us awake.
Okay. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
Moving on to code enforcement. Craig, are you there somewhere?
Yeah, I'm here.
There he is. Okay. Yes, we can. So this is a new addition to our monthly roundup. We are honored with the presence of code enforcement chief Craig Haig.
Hello, everybody. I was asked to be here mainly, I believe, due to the vacancies registration in the city code.
I think if you just give us a general, you know, like what your, you know, like just some simple statistics, like how many, like all those warnings that I see the pages for, that kind of thing. Whatever.
Yeah. Our department just so everybody's aware, and I know it was questioned in the past, our department has never been involved with the Common Council committee process. To my knowledge, never has. And even when I was hired 8 years ago, we were told then that we didn't have to report per charter. So depending on what the council is looking for, I submit a report monthly to the mayor and the Common Council president. And on that, we do an activity of the code department. As far as code reviews, building inspections, site plan review, planning, zoning, historic activity, complaints, inspections, and you know how many violations we issue in the course of a month. Basically, the activity of our department. So for those folks that I'm sure are well aware, and I can honestly say since 2013, the workload has increased tremendously over the last seven and a half years. And it's not so much, you know, the current workload as code stuff. That is a great, you know, we're busy. It keeps us going. But the additional codes, in 2013, we started our fire code, our fire inspection. That took approximately two and a half years to get up and running. Fortunately, we were able to employ a part-time person that he's code certified, and he does strictly my fire code inspections. So that's a code that's been up and running. And when I started in this position, again, 7 years ago, I was the only one besides a clerk. And now I have two part-time code officers and myself. So we're very busy. We give violation letters, and I send a copy of that to the mayor and the Common Council president in the course of the month. I don't have them numbers in front of me, but they usually range anywhere from, you know, 20. They could go as high as 60 or even 70. In the past couple months, them violation letters have been hitting around the 60 mark just because of people not registering for fire code inspections. And then violations, they're a letter that we send out to property owners that are required to register with us. We give them an opportunity to be in compliance before we start going to the next extreme level. And again, that's been a process over the last few years, you know, because people forget to register. So we have to send them a reminder, and that's basically what they are. And that brings me on to our vacant building list. This was a code that was adopted, I believe, in the later part of 2018. Yes. It's somewhat complicated as far as code enforcement for collecting data and securing reports and things of that nature. We're a little behind on it as far as getting the notices out to the property owners, but we do have a list. Thanks to people, you know, calling us up and letting us know that there are some buildings that possibly fall under this category. Currently, as of today, we have 44 buildings on the list. We started out with 50. And what happens with it is when there's a building permit that's been issued, or possibly a few of them that were fire damaged and have been renovated, and now have actually been issued COs in the last couple days. There was one on Washington Street that burned, and they finally finished the work on that, so that's getting a COO. And then there's been some others that transferred, and so it's a process and it's a learning curve for us. Unfortunately, it was additional work that we had to take care of. We finally are to a spot now where we think we got a good handle on how we're going to deal with this. And it's going to incorporate actually falling under some of it with our fire inspector. And him and I had a meeting recently and we discussed it, and we feel that some of these properties are really going to fall in that category as well. So we're moving forward with this currently. I think there's a lot of people out there that might be misinformed or misunderstood, but an empty building, as far as occupancy, don't necessarily make it vacant. anybody ever wanted to look in the code at 91-2, which is the section of the code that will describe an empty building, or I should say a vacant building, it's basically a building that's uninhabitable. This is the best way to look at it. Just because somebody has a building that's not occupied, that doesn't necessarily make it vacant. So that's a little, been a little misunderstanding on some of these complaints that we had to follow up on. We go and we look at the building and we determine, well, it's not vacant, it's just nobody's living in it for whatever reason. They could be trying to sell it, or they may be away for, you know, we'll call snowbirds, whatever the case may be. So we wanted to clarify that. There is some positive things going on with this part of our job. Is there have been some vacant buildings that have been vacant. Geez, I got one right now. It's a positive. It was labeled as unsafe in 2007. And it's been a thorn, I think, in every code official side, not to mention the city as the way it goes. Fortunately, we had a developer come in and bought three of these properties up. I had just finished their code review the other day, about a week or so ago, on this building and two others that this gentleman bought. And we are glad to say that we're going to put approximately 16 residential structures together in three buildings. So, and then code reviews could take anywhere from 3 days to 3 weeks. So that was a code review that I do on just three buildings, not to mention the other 200 building permits that we issue in the course of a year. So it's a busy department. We handle everything. Obviously, everybody, you know, knows code enforcement is a very active department. We are involved in some things we probably even shouldn't be. But it just seems like every time there's a question or a thought, it's let's call code enforcement. And then that's where we go from there. So again, being new to this portion of reporting to the committees, I'm not 100% sure what everybody was looking for other than the vacancy. I knew that was a question. And I'll be honest with you, right up till about a month ago, I wasn't even aware that I had to give a report on this. So it's been a little complicated on my end, and it's been a shortcoming, and that's a time management issue that I'm dealing with. But we are pretty positive we got this corrected and we're going to be able to move forward.
Thank you, Craig. There's one question so far. Rebecca, unmute yourself.
Hi, thanks. So I was curious, so the list of vacant buildings that you said there's 40 buildings on it currently. I guess, are those vacant, like you're saying, vacant? I mean, do those fall under the definition of vacant as you're defining it?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so because in the code there is this pretty hefty fine associated with vacant buildings under certain conditions, correct?
There's penalties.
Yeah.
For basically not registering the building, yes.
So, and do any of those buildings qualify for those penalties?
They may, but they wouldn't really qualify until we send them a notice or some type of violation, and that's where we're at now. We're doing that. Mm-hmm. We got to tell the property owner they have to register their building, and then if they fail to register it, that's where the penalty starts to come into place.
Hmm.
It's like anything else, that we will notify a property owner of a violation or a code issue, and we give them the opportunity to correct it. In this particular case, we'll notify these people that they have to register the building, and we will give them an opportunity to register that and correct it. If they don't, then it goes into the penalty phase.
Mm-hmm.
And then that will be basically an appearance ticket that is issued to the property owner to go to court. And I want to correct something that was said earlier, and I think it was a misunderstanding, or maybe a misunderstanding of the term. Code enforcement does not collect fines. We collect fees. fines are imposed by a court. I don't collect fines, never have. So these issues here, we would issue a violation to a property owner. They would have to go to the city court and answer that violation of court of law.
If I could just to clarify, so I was the one who asked about the fines, and so I'm looking at...
I caught the tail end of that, and I didn't want to interrupt Heather by no means. I think it was just a misunderstanding.
So in Code 91.7, it talks about penalties for offenses, and it does use... It talks about the fine. It says any person violating any provision of the vacant building registry or providing false information to the enforcement office shall be subject to a fine of not more than $1,000 per day of violation or imprisonment, not exceeding 1 year, or both such fine and imprisonment.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
again, what I'm saying is if somebody's in violation of 91.7, we will issue them a violation, which is an appearance ticket, subject to that section of the code, and they would have to answer it in city court.
Okay.
I don't have the authority to issue a fine, because that fine could be $1,000, and whatever the attorneys and the judge says, if the judge says, no, we're only going to charge $500, then it's $500. Trust me, if I could, they all get $1,000 fine. But that's not how it works. Fines, it's the same way, to give you an example, and I'm sure Chief Moore is on, I'm sure he might be able to elaborate a little bit better than I can, but if a police officer gives you a traffic ticket, they don't collect the fine, they send you to court, and the court collects.
Got it.
This is the same thing.
Gotcha.
Okay. Excuse me. Anybody else in the council have questions for Greg? In the public? See, that wasn't so painful, Craig.
Not at all. I'll keep that other comment to myself, but thanks everybody else for the previous, mainly Rob Perry.
Sorry.
I think you know where I'm going with that.
Yes, we all do. Thank you, Craig. And now, batting cleanup. Chief.
Cleanup is fourth, Mr. President.
You're right. Yeah, I guess you're betting. Wait, see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
It's bad enough I got to follow Rob with his slideshow. Now, Craig, this is impossible for me to do any better. Anyway, I'll make it quick.
Okie doke.
We have three things to report. Number one is our monthly required report on certain categories. I'll give them to you quickly. We had no use of force incidents in April of this year. We made 24 arrests over the month, and for the first time in quite a while, there was no felony arrests, only misdemeanors. We had 4 instances of emotionally disturbed persons, and the worst news of this report is we had 4 overdoses this month in April. The PD administered Narcan in 2 instances. One was successful, one was not. In the 4 overdoses, 2 people died. And we don't have all the reports in yet. We'll correlate that to fentanyl. So serious issue here in April that we're currently investigating. As you know, we've been talking about the staffing for HPD. We're currently at 22. We went through an interview process of 4 candidates last week, 2 of whom were from Hudson. So we're continuing in that process. The issue at hand for us is the folks that were interviewed were very good candidates, but none were police certified. None had been sponsored, had gone through an academy. So the run-up time to get them sponsored, go to the academy, and actually see the results out on the street would be 10 months away. So what we're trying to target are officers that have had police experience or at least certified by an academy. So we'll go on to the next banding of civil service list for police interviews, and we'll start that up this week. So again, we're at 22. And this all correlates to our budget, which has been a lot of talk about budgeting tonight. We checked the budget. We're holding our own in terms of our expenditures. Percentage-wise, we're right on course to deliver the year on budget. But the summers are unpredictable, which is why we're moving quickly to try to get the empty officer position filled. So if everything's remained the same, I think we're going to be okay in terms of expenditures. But again, the summer season, as someone mentioned earlier, is busy. And we don't want to let our guard down. So we'll continue in that process. And lastly, Alderman Garriga last month suggested a program, which I thought was a good idea, for citizen interpreters. So we've developed a form in draft form right now. But we have to work out a couple little legal matters. For example, if folks are going to volunteer to do interpreting in an emergency, we don't want that to swerve into a criminal case where the volunteer is at least has to understand they'd have to testify in a court of law. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to target now when an interpreter could help us in an emergency situation and would not have to get involved in the legal process. So I would predict that this month we will have the pamphlets out to the wards to try to get some help from the community to have ready access to the various languages that we see in our city. So that was a good idea, and I just wanted you to know we're following up on that.
Great.
You know, busy stuff around here. We had a bear in town today. We had possums in town last week. We have a project we're doing with the art department in high school to paint over some graffiti and create a mural. We're working on our on the side. We're working on perhaps beautifying the front of the station with a small park. And so we're busy over here. And going forward, everything's pretty good. That's all I have for tonight. Mr. President.
Thank you, Chief. Chief, those four who haven't gone to the academy, are you going to, I mean, do we have the money to sponsor them? Is that already?
We do. We've budgeted, you know, for 25 positions. We're at 22. We have, and then with the budget cutbacks, we had to reduce. So we have money available in our budget. The problem is the immediacy.
No, I understand that. Yeah.
We want to see the results of this hire, you know, before the summer's out.
Right.
So we hired someone tomorrow. There's a 12-week FTO program. I'm just worried about overtime. What happens if we lose an officer due to a sickness or some kind of injury? And then you have the vacations coming up and things like that. So I'm just trying to keep on course here and stay within our budget. Okay. So.
But those candidates are still possible.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then also, like, when is there going to be an academy? And that might not be to the fall.
Right.
So what we're really looking for is someone that's certified now.
I get it.
Yeah.
Okay, Rebecca, you have your hand up.
I think I asked this last month in a different form, possibly, but I am a little confused because my understanding was that we have, like, a policy of no hiring in the police department, even especially maybe to fill vacancies, because the idea is to reduce the size of the force to something that it more matches the size of our population. That's the basic understanding that I have about where we're at with the police department. I believe there was an executive order from the mayor that's called for no additional hiring in the police department.
I'm not sure that's correct. I think that was definitely true last year. But, Chief, do you have a...
Well, if we had a department that correlates the FBI or DCGS standards to population, as you say, you'd have a department of about 14 or 15 officers. So it's call volume that drives the size of the department. So what I've been pointing out is the filling of vacancy of someone who left us abruptly is not so much a new hire as it is a replacement on terms of safety, but also a monetary issue, because If we don't fill that, the city will be paying an exorbitant amount of money in overtime, which is not ideal. You know, you don't want these big numbers in overtime. It's mismanagement if an office, if it gets to be 30% of a person's salary is collected on overtime. We need to, there's big, I guess, should be talking about money. It's a bigger safety issue if we're short every shift.
I'd like to make clear. Oh, hold on one sec, Tiffany. Can you give me one sec? Somebody had asked me in emails about the report on the profile of all the stops in the city. And apparently, because I didn't bother to look it up, the first report is not due until July. So in case that those people are listening, that'll be ready in July. Tiffany, did you have a question again? Sorry.
Yeah, I was what Rebecca brought up, I was hearing that from others as well. So I just wanted to know if we can get that information so we are all accurate on it and not going by I think or it was said or I'm not sure. I want us all to be 100% sure of what the dynamics are of how we are supposed to move forward with the police department and hires. And if it's the way that Rebecca Wolf described, then that's the way that we should move. If it isn't, then that's the way we should move or discuss it. So whether it's Tom, the mayor, Jeff Baker, someone, or all three of you, please get that information out to the council.
Right. It's definitely a question for the mayor's office, because since he's in charge of hiring. But I will do that.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the chief? Chief, you seem to be...
I think for just to make it known of what the department is doing as far as working with the community, once you get all the do's and don'ts together, chief, maybe make a quick press release so the entire city can get to hear it, and maybe you'll get people calling you to volunteer.
On the interpreter, Tiffany?
Yes.
Interpreter,
yes.
I was hoping to actually print the flyer, you know, get it like professionally printed and have it distributed. We'll put it, of course, online.
We can do both, but I think it would be best if the public can actually hear it from your voice, from your mouth, from the podium, from wherever you want to stand. And us as council members can help distribute flyers to our constituents.
Yeah, that's
okay,
fine.
Thank you. Okay, since there seems to be no other... Any questions from the public for the chief? I don't see any. Oh, yes, we have one there. Sorry. Linda.
I just want to say to the chief and the commissioner, the no turn on right at the stoplight of Columbia North 4th has made a huge difference. As far as I know, there's been no more accidents since you all put it up. So I want to thank you all for doing that. Hurrah.
I think you see the new curb painting that DPW did at 3rd and Columbia by the mosque has made the traffic or the large truck turning a lot safer there, too. And I give taps to Rob from DPW, Dan Beschkoten, who did that, made it a priority. It's much safer down there now.
Great. Tiffany, you want to say something else?
Yes, thank you. I just remember. Thank you for bringing that up, Linda. Recently, I ran into a woman from the First Ward, and she told me down by the terraces going towards Amtrak that she's been begging since the previous former mayor for a stop sign in that area. There's a huge apartment complex down there, and there's a lot of children. And she said her husband literally, she said the child had the right of way, but her husband literally had to grab her as the car was zooming down. And it could have unfortunately killed the little girl. So maybe if you guys can see the area at out, scope it out, and actually put a stop sign there, She says she has requested it since the former mayor, Rick Rector.
Where exactly?
I believe.
Do you mean at the top, at the beginning of the top of the
hill? Going down. She said they're zooming down that hill, so when they're going down.
North 2nd Street, Tiffany?
The south. Is
that what you're talking about? No, that's going south.
South
Amtrak.
South Front Street.
Oh, okay. I got it.
Thank you.
Jane Trombley, you have a question or a comment?
Because I just like to follow on Rebecca's, sorry, Rebecca, God, you're on my brain tonight. Tiffany's comment about the stop sign, because I had, you and I had an email exchange about some stop signs on Union Street, which were sort of the same reason that, I have a walk around date, I think Wednesday, with Peter Pugiano to look at possible street sign additions on Union Street, because from the light at 5th and the light at 3rd, which are two super long blocks, there is no traffic. We talked about bumps and stuff, and that isn't really operable, but the fact that there are no street signs at 4th or at the post office going either direction poses the same kind of problem that Tiffany's just brought up on Front Street. So uninhibited traffic patterns just, you know, create some kind of a thoroughfare. So I'd like to bring that up in addition to our correspondence on it.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you.
I guess that's it for you, Chief. Thank you.
Mr. President, please.
What's that?
I just wanted to tell everybody we have a car seat event May 29th at the firehouse from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. More than half the people don't know how to properly install a car seat. So for the safety of the kids, we'll have certified instructors there to show you how to do it. 10 to 1, May 29th at Central Firehouse.
Do you have any digital flyers that we can print out ourselves?
I posted it on the Facebook page for Hudson Police today.
Okay.
So we can, you can share that around.
Okay.
And we have some posters we're putting up.
Okay. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Moving right along, we can go to the resolutions. We have 8 to introduce. Shaheem, are you ready?
Yep.
Okay. Resolution number 1. You're familiar with these. Resolution for Commissioner of Deeds. Can I have an introduction, please?
Calvin, I'll introduce.
Calvin, and a second, please. DeJuan's not here, so we need somebody else.
Well, I had to come out today, boy.
I'll do it. Rebecca.
Who is that, Rebecca?
Yep.
Thank you. The next resolution, please, Shaheem. This is a resolution authorizing the mayor to sign a contract with LBS Ecological for an urban forestry assessment. This is a job that has been funded by a grant. There's no city money going towards it. And the CAC has chosen this company based on a standard kind of bid process. So, can I have an introduction, please? Calvin, and was that Rebecca?
Yeah.
Okay. Any conversation about this tonight, or it seems kind of no brainer? The next one, please, Shaheem. The color, yes. This is accepting a donation from the Colarusso family to support the Prominent Hill project. As you know, the final bids came in much higher than anticipated, and the Henry von Ameringen Foundation donated $650,000, and the Colarusso family is donating an extra $175,000 so that we can, where am I here? Oh, so that we can, well, this is confusing as an interesting end. Yeah, I see two different numbers there.
It's the city is allocating $175,000. The gift from the Colarusso family is $100,000.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I see now. Got it. do I have an introduction, please?
Eileen, I'll introduce.
Thank you, Eileen. Who was that? Oh, Tiffany. Thank you, Tiffany. Your dream of an ADA compliant park is closer and closer.
Yay.
Let's skip 4 and 5 for a second because that's going to be more controversial for the time being. Shaheem, can you go to the authorizing the tourism board funds? That one there, yes. This is, as you know, we got a while back a grant to do a parking study, but it was only half funded. The other half is coming from the tourism board. So that we can, as you can imagine, parking is essential, or planning our parking is essential to the future impact of tourism on our city. So this is authorizing to use that tour. This allows that tourism board grant to go forward. Can I have an introduction, please?
Rebecca, I'll introduce that.
Thank you, Rebecca. A second, please.
Calvin, I'll second.
Thank you, Calvin. Okay, the next one, Shaheem. This is getting ahead of things. This is to designate and celebrate June as LGBTQ Pride Month in the city of Hudson. We can read the full resolution, I think, at our formal meeting.
Make the motion.
Okay, Tiffany, thank you. A second?
Can I just say something?
Who's that?
Sorry, this is Rebecca.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I think the third whereas is a little bit off, because I think, if I remember, the word condone.
Yeah, I see. We'll fix that, don't worry. That's obviously...
That's my mistake. Yeah. I'll fix that. That's embarrassing.
Yeah,
that was not the intent.
Yeah,
I thought you didn't mean that.
Right. Oh gosh, can you imagine if I read that out loud next week? And
that's bad. Sorry.
Okay, so Rebecca, are you seconding it?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, thank you. The next one, Shaheem, please. This just we've already designated the money for this. This is just to affirm the selection of Gary Pernhagen as the manager of the Seasonal Streets program. Some of you may know him. He's, I think his partner is the owner of the Gilded Owl. They live on Warren Street. He actually, I think, will be a future council member next year, if things go according to the way they seem. But he's willing to take on this job, which is admirable, considering it could be difficult. Do I have an introduction, please?
Calvin, I'll introduce.
Calvin, thank you. A second, please.
Oh, second.
Oh, okay. Yep, I think Jane beat whoever else was. So we have Jane as the number 2. Okay, Shaheem, can you go back to 4 and 5? Now, we're just going to introduce and second these. These are not obviously being decided tonight, and we can discuss them as much as you want. But they're two...
I have to refuse myself, Tom.
Oh, thank you, Calvin.
May I say something, please?
Well, let me just get Calvin out of the picture here.
It pertains to Calvin.
Oh, okay.
To the extent you're going to organize it, I'm not sure he needs to recuse himself while we're talking about the benefits of the bond resolution. Or as an option,
but it does for the
But to the extent that we're talking about the potential gift, yes, he should.
Right. Okay. So we'll put.
So if you want to maybe take comments first on the bond resolution issue.
Okay. We'll do it that way. Did you want to say something, Tiffany, before we go forward?
I do. That's number one. I wanted to say that Calvin shouldn't have to leave. And number two, I mean, we've been doing this the entire time. And I've just been thinking and thinking and over, and it was brought up to me because every time we have a discussion and we always put Calvin in the waiting room, right?
Correct.
If we were having in-person meetings, Calvin would not be asked to leave the room.
Yes, he would.
Leave the building. He would
just have
to recuse himself from the vote.
No, he would be asked to leave.
No.
Yes, he would.
Yes, that is the rule, Tiffany.
It never happened in the past.
It may not have been properly advanced, but there have been clear rulings recently that when there is a conflict of interest like that, the person is supposed to leave the room so there's no issue that they're, you know, inadvertently or, you know, advertently influenced.
Even though they're not going to vote on it.
Correct.
They're supposed to leave the room.
Yep.
Can you send that to me in writing where that law states, please? Thank you.
Okay. So let's look at the other one. This next resolution, we'll talk about this one second. We'll do them in reverse order. What we're going to do here, we're looking at two resolutions. We'll introduce them both and then decide at some point what we're going to go forward with. So let's talk about the next one first, please, Shaheem.
Say that again?
Could you skip to the next resolution? So we don't have to get rid of Calvin yet. Okay. This is a resolution that would allow Heather to go for a bond to finance a renovation to City Hall that would maybe be compliant with the Department of Justice ADA requirements. So that's one option that's on the table. Now, I guess we can talk about the other one. So I'm going to put Calvin in the waiting room. Sorry, Calvin. Shaheem, can you go back to the other resolution? And this, of course, is simply accepting $100,000 to study the building located at 400 State Street and decide whether it's feasible to use it as a possible city hall. Jeff, were you suggesting that we should introduce both?
Just for the purposes of your organization is to get them both introduced. And I think next week you should get a sense of which one you want to vote on.
Okay.
My suggestion, you really have to, the city, and Michael Tremides is here, he may want to speak in, but the city has to show movement to DOJ on the ADA issue.
Correct. So we want to do.
So you're faced with basically making a choice of proceeding with the changes to the city hall of putting in a chairlift and bathrooms for $475,000. Or proceeding with an investigation of a new city hall at 400 State Street,
right?
With the initial $100,000 gift from the Galvin Foundation, and then the way that donation agreement is being drafted, you'd have roughly a year, a little over a year, to finish that study,
right?
And a year and a half, basically.
Okay.
And then make a decision as to whether it makes sense to go forward with that project, which is the donation of the building and the $1.4 million, and then determine what more, if any, has to be paid for by the city to complete the work.
Tiffany, you have your hand up.
Yes. What building is that 400 and State Street? And is it, like, ready to move into, ready to go, or has to have...
No.
No.
We're talking about the old library.
Oh, okay.
And this is, you know, it's not even close to being move-in. It's the idea.
I was thinking Columbia Street.
Right.
All right. Okay.
You recall what this is? What we're
yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Just I don't want to go over something if you just, you know, you just forgot.
Thank you.
So it's $100,000 study if it's possible. Let's see. I got another hand raised. Someone, John Rosenthal.
Again, I would say, since we've already commissioned a study, and we've moved, I think if for the basis of having to move quickly with the ADA compliance, I would say that the $475,000 bonding to me seems like a no-brainer. Anything actually working with our existing city hall per the study we did gives us some great options. It's my understanding that this would have to be something we have to be cleared up quickly before we even agree to do anything with the Galvin Foundation on 4 and State Street. I've been told that building, that the Galvin Foundation received a new market tax credits for that building that mandates they do renovation work before it's transferred to anyone, essentially. And those tax credits are pretty lucrative. God knows where they went. But you know, any type of deal of them giving us money is a real big deal for them because they probably cleared more money than the $1 million that they'd be giving us. So I would just say that since we have our own options and we've studied our own options, it's my recommendation that we go with something that's already on the table rather than waiting a year and a half to find out that we're going to try to get nowhere renovating an albatross of a building. Meaning 400 State Street would be a massive undertaking, incredibly expensive for the city to do. Mm-hmm. And that $100,000 they're proposing, I would say the Galvin Foundation would be better served putting that toward a rent relief fund for people who are rent distressed or using it for Galvin Housing Resources or any of the other organizations that deal with the immediate housing needs of this community rather than wasting it on a study for us to, about a building that we won't be able to afford to move into.
Well, that's what would be made clear if we did the study. Anyone else?
It wouldn't be a waste of trying to make the city ADA compliant. It's not like, you know, we're trying to make something lavish for the council. It's all about the people at this moment.
We do. I agree with you, Tiffany. We do have something that we could move quickly on, which I'm just saying that $475,000 bond, I think, is a better move in terms of the people.
It's a move. I'm not sure it's better, and I'm not sure it doesn't make the building fully ADA compliant is one of the downsides of it.
Exactly.
Well, the full renovation would.
Yeah, the full renovation would. In any case, Dominic has his hand raised, I see.
Thank you, Tom. I kind of agree with John at this point. I think in terms of, you know, the ADA, DOJ, I mean, we're talking about, you know, I understand the study, but they have a year to do the study. If any renovations, we're talking about possibly a 5 to 8 year project where we're going to be able to address this ADA issue in a more timely fashion for the DOJ. But we don't want to kick the can down the road where it's going to open up more issues for us in the future with the DOJ. Well, so I think Michael's doing a good job moving a lot of things forward to fulfill. And I just think this is just the next step on moving the ADA compliant issue forward for City Hall.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Well, as Jeff suggested, let's just get them both introduced and then we can further hash this out. So for the Galvin Initiatives one, do I have an introduction?
Mm-mm.
No one wants to do it.
The introduction for the 100,000?
Correct.
Tom, I introduce.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Malachi and Tiffany. Now we can bring Calvin back. Let's see. Admit Calvin. And can you go to the other resolution, please, Shaheen? Calvin, are you back with us? Where is he? Oh, there you go. Okay, I need an introduction and a second to this. Wrong one. No, I'm talking about the other resolution, Shaheem, the one for not the Galvin one, but the ADA compliance. No. There you go. That's it. Okay. Can I have an introduction and a second?
I'll introduce.
Who's that?
Jane.
And that was Tiffany?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you both. We'll take this up further, obviously, at our... I hope, since they're both actually long documents, I hope everybody reads them before the next meeting and comes in fully prepared to discuss at length what we're going to do. I can see the arguments on both, both ways of going forward. Let's see. Oh, we have one more thing. I'm sorry. Shaheem, can you put up the local law, please? I'm sure you'll all agree with this. This is, as Michael works on the Department of Justice mandate, or it turns out we have to, one of the things we need to do is to amend our code to make sure that all our sidewalks follow the standard, the ADA standards for accessible design. So this is a local law to make that happen. Can I have an introduction, please?
I'll introduce.
Calvin, and a second, please.
Rebecca, I'll second.
Rebecca, thank you both. And now we are done with that last bit of business. So I can open it up first to council members, if you have any. Shaheem, can you take that? Yeah, thanks. So I can see everybody. Council members, questions, comments? I see Rebecca. You're already there. Go ahead.
We're in the general portion, right? Like,
yeah. Questions. Yeah, the general portion. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, don't post any documents. Sorry.
I'm not going to.
Okay.
I just wanted to bring up the question again about the doc vote that mm-hmm. we just had.
Yeah.
Because I did feel concerned that the council didn't have appropriate time to consider really what we were voting on at the moment, given the considerations of, you know, of the kind of different options that had been presented and what was actually being determined by the vote. And I did look at code, which actually, if I can just for a second, seems to say to me that that basically the council is the one that determines like certain kinds of leasing of city-owned land, that it's actually a council decision, and that it seems to me that the council should have been presented with both options to determine which, like, we should have been given a chance to vote on which option we wanted to proceed on, rather than being asked to vote to approve one or the other. That's
super. Agree.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we weren't given enough time to do that. And I, you know, that's what I mentioned earlier. I mean, it was kind of unfortunate. But, you know, the time crunch, this whole business should have been solved back in January, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And what can I tell you? I don't want to, you know, blame anyone.
Can I make a motion to, like, have a second vote to not necessarily, I mean, I understand we can't unvote the vote that happened, mm-hmm. but a motion to introduce a second option for the leasing of the dock? Something like
that? I think that would defeat the whole idea that Michael had of putting it on the agenda. I mean,
do we have a motion on the table, or no. Are you asking a question? Because no. I'm confused.
I mean, I have I don't not. Think, I don't know what the motion that I can make is, but I would be open to any guidance about what the motion is.
Yeah,
you can make a motion on whatever you want. You just need somebody to second it to agree with you.
This is true.
As long as it's legal.
I think. Okay. Well, let me put it this way, Rebecca. I think we, the vote was clear, but I don't. So I'm not sure what would be accomplished by trying to open this up again.
Well, I guess what makes me think that it wasn't clear is that it seemed that several council people were expressing, like...
Can somebody... Somebody has... Somebody's... Okay, never mind. Go ahead.
It seemed like several people expressed an opinion that then was counter to the way that they voted, honestly.
No, they're... You mean when they were saying that they wanted the Hudson Cruises to work with the Sloop Club? You mean that?
Yeah, basically. So, like, essentially, I mean, yeah, I understand it's like maybe we just were asked to vote too soon. But I don't know. I would like to make a motion that we revisit the concept of like a shared dock for the summer, or that
I think
that the council have the opportunity to review both proposals.
Well, that's kind of a confused motion. I think you'd have to have more.
I think you're trying to say you want to make a motion that the council gets to hear the proposal from the Sloop Club.
I would like to make a motion that the council have the opportunity to review the proposal from the Sloop Club.
Okay.
Yeah. Then we shouldn't have voted on it.
Yes, exactly.
So, Tom, this is Peter Bajon.
Oh, okay. Peter, go ahead.
So just let me clarify.
Go ahead. I was going to say, Peter had something to do with this, so go ahead.
I don't know if Michael's still on the call or not.
Yeah, he is.
This was a formal request for proposals that was issued. And it was a shortened response. So anything you do has to be within the context, and I know Jeff is on the call, has to be in the context of that request for proposals. So we had issued a request for proposals. It was published. It was on the website, and it was distributed. We received actually two full responses, one that wasn't really conclusive, and then one interested party. So we received four contacts on it. And it was published, and it was the record. So if you do have the option to meet with the proposers, but anything you do has to be within that context. If you wanted to create some other relationship that wasn't outlined as part of that request for proposals, you'd have to reissue a request for proposals and cancel all of the proposals that came in on this one.
Real quick, Peter, was the RFP driven by the mayor? Was that, the code makes it sound like we dispose of property and therefore the common council should be the ones directing an RFP process?
Let me read the very brief.
Tom, it does, by the way.
We're not disposing of property. What are you talking about?
Well,
let's read what it says.
This also isn't a lease. This is a license agreement.
Yeah.
It's not a lease.
Right.
It's not an interest in real property that goes on for a period of time. It's a license for a
security. Jeff, let me ask you this. Since you're hearing everybody's concerns, is there a way that we can clean this up? Let the council know if we're already locked in because we voted on it. Is there a way around that? Do we vote again, bringing the Sloop Club's proposal back before the council, before the regular meeting? What can we do to correct this? Because it seems like some of the council members want to take back their vote, and it seems like other council members didn't get enough information for their vote. So what can we do?
Who wants to take back their vote? I haven't heard that.
But it sounded like...
No, these are all people who voted against.
I heard some people earlier say that they voted too soon because they wasn't given the information.
That was Rebecca, voice. And Rebecca voted for it, so I don't see how
she... And I heard Eileen's voice.
I didn't vote for it.
No. Rebecca voted against it and would not change her vote. Eileen, did you want to change
your
vote?
My question is for the attorney.
Hold on a second. Eileen, go ahead.
I think that we're at the point where... This is, we introduced and seconded, so there's plenty of time this week for all of us to think about it and talk about it.
Sure.
And if there is a solution that we can come up with collectively, we could amend it and vote on the amended resolution if there is some, compromise or way to do better.
No, we voted, Eileen. We voted
next week. We voted to introduce it.
No, we voted on it.
This is part of the special meeting.
That's why it was a special meeting.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Gotcha.
That's why people are saying it wasn't enough information or enough time.
Okay, let me.
So I'm asking Jeff what to do about it.
Hold on, everybody. Dominic, you've had your hand up for a while. Dominic?
Actually, I was just waiting for the general to say something.
Oh, okay. I'll come back to you.
Thanks, sir.
Michael, I think, has something relevant to say. I hope.
Yeah, I mean, I think the basic gist, I think, is similar to when the council voted. So I think if there are council members, I mean, the mayor, obviously, like, my understanding is the council authorized the mayor to sign a contract at the special meeting. At this correct. Time, the mayor has not signed that contract since that special meeting. So I think if the council wanted to rescind that authorization, that I would say that my guess is that's a legal option if that's the way you want to go. I feel like if somebody voted in favor of it and now they've had an hour or two to think about it and they want to change their vote, I think that was the council's prerogative. I would say the general decision points are still there, that there is a sense of urgency. We want to get the docs in. We had what I thought were two good proposals, and I thought that the Hudson Cruises proposal was stronger, and I went through the reasons why, and we can go through that again. And if the council wants to take longer to look at those two proposals, it will delay the process. But I also, in some ways, I guess I don't want the council feeling like you were, like you didn't like the way you voted. Ultimately, it was a close vote. And if people want to change their mind because they had an hour to think about it, my guess is that you have that legal option. Either way, there's going to be ramifications, right? So if you want to wait a couple weeks or however long you want to wait, it just means that's that much longer until we get anybody into the water. But that's the decision point.
Thank you, Michael. I wish we would have heard that from Jeff. I think that's what the council would want to do, is rescind the vote, maybe have that special meeting next week before the regular meeting, so we have at least enough time to read the other proposal.
I don't
vote or speak with them.
Jeff, we can't rescind a vote that was done in a special meeting, can we? In this meeting?
I'm checking. I'm not really sure. I don't. Yeah.
And I'm not sure that anybody would change their vote.
Are there any other attorneys in the house that works for the city?
I mean, is there anybody in the council who would change their vote? I mean, the five of us who voted against it are still against it.
Basically, I would like, in terms of my vote, it could be a possibility for me changing. I just feel that the time crunch that was put on us,
I agree,
should not be forced on us, and that's why I voted the way I did.
Mm-hmm.
Am I happy 100% with my vote? Absolutely not. But in the city's interest, but again, that's unfair to us because, again, I just think that, Hudson Cruises can offer more money at $3,000 because they got tourism board money last year where the soup club didn't have that luxury. And so their bid obviously is going to be lower. So, I mean, I just think that that would be my only thing about revisiting the issue.
So how about we save, Michael, can you ask the mayor not to sign it, and then we just reconsider it at our meeting next week?
Please.
Does that sound like a possibility? Oh, you're muted.
I could. I guess maybe I'm not sure if it makes sense for the council to pass I'm not sure if you want to take a vote on me on the, and that doesn't have to be binding.
Yeah.
But I guess in some ways, like, it seems weird for the council to pass a resolution, then you just tell me to not.
I know. I agree.
But
Jeff.
So I'm not sure. Can you just take you can take a voice vote or something, but just not mean.
Motion to rescind or something.
Or a motion, just a non-binding resolution to hold off. But I guess I feel like it would be good to have some formality for the mayor to go off of now that we've officially passed a resolution.
Yeah. Jeff, any opinion on this?
I will make that motion.
Why don't you make a motion along what Michael said, requesting that the mayor withhold executing a contract while the council considers whether it would like to rescind the vote.
Okay. I'll make that motion without repeating it. Exactly what the city attorney said.
Thank you, Tiffany. A second, please.
I'll second.
All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. So, there we go.
Is there a, I guess, presumably one of the council members, the council will want to do some work to research this between now and the next meeting.
Yes.
Is there a point person who's going to lead that effort?
Yeah, I think Rebecca, since...
I was just going to ask, can we just see the proposals?
Yes.
I mean, can the proposals be sent to us somehow?
Yes. Well, we'll get it all to...
I'm happy to distribute them.
Yep.
If you want to send them to me, I can distribute them to other council people.
Yep, we'll get it out to you. I'll get it out to you right after the meeting ends.
Okay.
Let's see, what else we got here? To Rebecca... other comments from council members?
Tom.
So, yes, Dominic.
Dominic. So just I wanted to give a quick update.
I didn't come back to you. I'm sorry. I forgot.
Regarding, I sent it to Jeff and I'll send it to you when I get off here. With the hearing back from Assemblymember Barrett's office, it looks like we got to go ahead to move forward with the speed reduction,
great,
including the truck route. And 23B and 9, which is, I think, great news. And then, so I'll send it your way to Tom, and mm-hmm. then maybe we can move forward to see how we can, you know, make it happen. And then, you know, then work on the funding for, you know, signage and things like that.
What do you mean? She means she's going to put it forth at the state, or it's already, what exactly is Dee Dee Barrett's office doing?
No, Dee Dee Barrett gave the chief of staff gave the opinion that DOT gave the go ahead. That it's in the city's hands to reduce the speed limit, including the truck route 23B and 9.
Excellent. Thank you.
Wait a minute. Dominic, you and I have to talk about that. That's not what the email says. It says that DOT doesn't have any problem with jurisdiction. Is this actually passed? This hasn't passed both houses yet and been signed.
My understanding is it doesn't have to go to because DOT relinquished it and it didn't have to go to the state because
No, I don't think that's true. I think this resolved the question of whether the local law would apply to the truck routes going through the city too, not just all the other routes as that we could apply to that. Why don't you and I talk about it? I mean, I agree it's good news. I think we still haven't finished the legislative process.
Okay.
Okay. It may have been my interpretation. I apologize.
But no
it
problem.
Like, no, but it is good news.
It is good news.
There's no question about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Dominic. Anybody from the council? More comments? Any comments? Tiffany, you're muted. I mean, yeah.
No, I'm waiting for new business.
Oh, we are in new business.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to let the public know I have some information, and if you are interested in taking the vaccine for COVID-19, please give me a call. The location would be at Bliss Towers from 3 to 5 on Wednesday, 12th. That's this Wednesday. It will be outdoors. If it's raining, it will be in the community room. If you are interested, please give me a call. I have information on the side effects and on the vaccines, and I have it also in English, Spanish, and also in the Bengali language.
Great. Thank you. Michael,
and it's free.
Oh, yeah. Michael, do you have something you wanted to add?
If it's okay to talk about a couple new projects that I just wanted to flag, I think they're likely to come up at the next council meeting coming out of the mayor's office.
Okay, as quickly as possible because we're getting to that 3-hour point.
Yep. Okay. Number one, we had our truck study meeting last week, and that phase of the project is coming towards a close where the study is near finalizing. And what we're noticing, we knew this is coming, but certainly from the meeting was really clear that we're really going to need to do some more outreach with Greenport and Claverick residents to really build a coalition to support this project. We did not use the full portion of the $100,000 grant on phase one. So we were looking at doing a change order to expanding the scope of the project to include some targeted outreach efforts in Claverick and Greenport. So we'd spend off a little bit more of that grant. And so we'd ultimately look for a contract approval from the council to go into a phase two or phase 1.5. And so I just wanted to flag that for the council. If you have any concerns, you want to talk more about it, I guess reach out to me between now and next week's meeting where we'll probably have a resolution to vote on.
That's it?
And then number two, we are nearing the next phase for the Hudson Connects project, which is the complete streets project. Right. And so we'll also need a contract approval, and hopefully we'll have that ready for the next week's meeting too. And again, I guess if people have questions or concerns,
you mean a presentation from the...
No, I think we just sort of be like, here's the next phase. We always knew it was coming, and it's basically we're just negotiating the specifics, but there's going to be the first phase is really about establishing some of the scope and some of the outreach. Mm. And we had talked about sort of giving a little bit more focus to Front and State Street. But the next phase is going to have a significant amount of additional outreach. And it has things like overseeing the engineering, creating an RFP for the actual engineering plan. And so to sort of enter into that next phase, we've completed the first phase of the contract. And so in order to enter that next phase, we would need the council approval. And so if people want to talk about specifics between now and that, the sort of the details aren't, we're like 90% there of finalizing that with arterial. And so if you have specific things you want to talk about between now and next week, we can do that. Otherwise, the project will sort of be put off for another month if we don't get it to next week's meeting.
Okay. Is that it?
That's it.
Thank you, Michael. And now, at long last, the public. And we have one hand up from Ron Kupnicki.
Hi, thank you. What I have to ask about is old business.
Okay.
It's on the question of the possibility of the combination of the CAS site with the Dunn warehouse and the adjacent properties as a package to be offered to a developer. Is that possibility now absolutely out of the question?
Do you want me to answer, Tom?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that.
I mean, I think it's a great idea to package all those things, and the city has reached out to HDC with that suggestion, and they have given mixed messages about HDC's interest in collaborating with the city. And the last I heard is that the last communication I had was probably a couple months ago, and they said something along the lines of they're not interested in sort of like further in working with the city at this time. But I think that's a great idea. So I certainly am, I can't speak for the city, but I certainly am interested in exploring that.
Okay. Now, as a follow-up, since the DRI committee is no longer having regular meetings, will the ad hoc committee on selling properties be a possible source of information about DRI-related issues from the city's point of view?
I don't really understand that question. How? Why would?
Well, I understand that you pointed out at the recent meeting of the ad hoc committee on selling properties that the DRI committee was no longer having regular meetings. And since the committee on selling properties is involved, for example, with the Dunn warehouse and the adjacent properties and the possible sale thereof, they are in the DRI area. You would be a source, the committee would be a source of information about the progress of the possible sale of those properties.
Does that make
it clear?
No, the selling properties does not include Dunn.
We've actually pretty much determined to change the name of the committee to just properties.
That's right.
But, and Tom, isn't it not, I mean, is it not sort of that those properties are simply not properties that we're talking about currently, right? Like if we were talking about them, then
it might be, yes.
Information.
Right.
They are sellable.
Not necessarily.
Why not necessarily?
Because we haven't put them for sale.
But they could be sold. That's what I'm asking you.
Yeah, but there's no intent right now to sell them.
Well, I'm not asking about intent. I'm asking about potential.
I'm sorry. I don't really understand the question,
though. You could change your mind, presumably, or the committee could change its mind.
There's been no decision about selling or not selling those particular properties, right? I mean, it's
correct.
Okay, well, you're kind of missing the point because I'm asking if they could be sold should you decide to want to sell them. That's my question. And is the answer yes or no?
I think they would say that the reason why the DRI committee isn't meeting, because we found it's more useful to sort of focus on a couple projects at a time. So it was really like working with Star Lighthouse on Prominent Hill Park rather than having the whole DRI committee meet. And that project was sort of taking up the bulk of the time for the arterial project. But I would say that when Dunn becomes a prominent project where the city is actively working on developing it, whether it's for sale or some other or through lease or some other partnership, there certainly will be there will be public information about that. And so it's not that a bunch of stuff undone is happening behind the scenes. It's that, you know, like, you know, all the information that's been determined. And so when that project gets picked up,
whether that committee, the Committee on Selling Properties, which now I guess is going to be called something else and is not going to be interested in selling properties, might be the conduit for information to the public about the Dunn site, for example. And I guess the answer to that question is no. Am I correct?
I guess so. For now.
For now. Okay, so it's now no, but it could be yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Anybody else in the public have questions? Or comments? Thank you, Ron. Anyone else? No? Okay, wait a little bit longer.
Well, can I just ask a follow-up to Ronald's question? I mean,
really?
I do think it's a pretty legitimate question. Like, where is the information coming to the public from about DRI projects? You know, how is that information being funneled to the public? I guess I think that, because I know that that's been a persistent.
Did you not see the announcement about work on Promenade Hill issued this week?
No, totally. But I mean about projects that are not like in the spotlight, as it were. You know.
Well, they're not in the spotlight because nothing. You know, the projects have been prioritized. Michael, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the projects have been prioritized, and really nothing's going forward right at this moment about those projects. The public is always engaged on every single project.
So is the answer just that if there's no news, then there's no news kind of thing?
Basically? I think that might be the case, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so the DRI section on the website, there's like a document page. And so it's got the relevant document. So there's like generally like that's where the stuff is. So if you look, there's like a lot of documents on Promenade Hill Park and a little bit, you know, and less on Hudson Connects, and then like a lot less on the next two, and that reflects sort of the movement on it. But so I do think there's lots of times where people are asking questions like, "We want to know about this thing," and it's like that the thing, like the, there's not, the thing doesn't exist, so we can't. So I guess we could put out more press releases saying like there isn't an update. But that's what these meetings are. So I think it's like, hey, if the council wants to help engage the public and help get the word out about projects, I think that's really great. But I don't think there's like a ton of, it's not like, I don't think there's a ton of secret information. If you have this particular update about a project, I think we could talk about it offline or now about the status, if any, of the DRI projects.
But otherwise, that's the answer, is that the website is the source of information. And if there's nothing on the website, DRI section, then there's nothing going on other than what already has been put out there.
And the website is the main repository. I certainly think that, you know, we've had public events for the two projects that have really advanced, and there has been like press and other outreach for those two projects. So the two projects that have really advanced,
Actually,
I think
three.
People know about them.
Since two are combined, so it's technically
right.
three. So
yeah. So I wouldn't say that the website is the only way that people can get information, but the website is the most comprehensive way to get information. And there's, if you look at those the document section, you'll get a pretty good sense of where everything is at. But if people have other specific questions about where a project is at, they can always contact me. And it'd be great to have your help to share that, spread that word.
Anything else from anyone? Give it a little time here. Having been criticized for seeking an adjournment too quickly. Okay. Motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second? Calvin seconds?
I'll second, yeah.
All in favor? Please say aye.
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 Anyone opposed?
Aye.
Okay, we made it 1 minute over 3 hours, so that's perfect in the scheme of things. Thank you all, and good night.
Have a good night, everybody.
And happy Mother's Day to all of you lovely ladies that I didn't see yesterday.
Happy Mother's Day, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.